Ornan has been trying every way that he thinks might work to get Eugenides to take the reins of power. Mostly, I think he's put his faith in rational argument, and he lectures Jen every opportunity he gets. It has only just dawned on him that if he succeeds, Eugenides will be king of Aetolia. And that is not happy news? King, Edith emphasized, of Aetolia.
Is that the book we're reading? Hello, nefarious thieves. I'm Noelle.
And I'm Caitlin.
And this is the Aetolian Archives, your Queen's Thief reread podcast to get you through the wait for Return of the Thief, which is in 6 months and 2 days. It's February 23rd, 2020.
This episode, we're doing something we haven't done before. We're breaking a chapter into two parts. So between this episode and the next, we'll be discussing chapter 12 of The King of Aetolia.
We learned our lesson from chapter 11, which was so long. Today's talk will take us through the scene depicting the king's royal tantrum. That's to the top of page 328 in the newest edition, for those of you who are reading along, which means, unfortunately, no Costas.
A Costas-less week here on the Aetolian Archives, but next time we'll be very Costas-centric.
In the meantime, our discussion today includes Helen, the Magus, Eugenides, Aetolia, Relius, and Philologos?
Remember that guy?
There's a lot of talking about Jen in this first half of chapter 12, and I'd like to draw attention to, I wrote down all the adjectives that are used to describe him, and the list that I ended up with is nefarious, underhanded, incorrigible, pleasant, irreverent, distracting, young, afraid, stubborn, and strong.
Love it.
We see him from Relius's perspective, and we see him from Aetolia's perspective, through her talking about him to Relius, and then we see him from his attendant's perspective again.
And Helen's and the Magus's too, I guess.
Yes.
Which, apparently, the two of them are on first name terms. Or at least the Magus's. We don't, I guess.
Bold of you, Magus. Yeah, we don't even know his name.
Yeah.
It's a Minister of War situation.
I think Megan Willen Turner said somewhere on the internet that they do have names, but
that she knows in her
that
head?
That she knows in her head.
Ugh. That's, I'm interested in that choice, because there are other characters whose names it took us a while for us to learn, like Helen and Aetolia, but there was a moment where we gained access to that intimacy, but it hasn't happened with either the Magus or the Minister of War, both of whom are older and male and sort of paternal figures, and I don't know if that's a factor or if it's just a coincidence.
Yeah, and you know, I would think at first, like, okay, the Minister of War, we know him in his capacity as the Minister of War as well as Jen's father, but the Magus is a character who's central enough that we, he's very developed as a character. Yeah, so,
but we don't know.
I don't know. Well, like,
we don't see his family.
Yeah, we don't know.
We know some things about his past,
but not really about him as a person, I guess. Like, just thinking about, like, all the things you would know about someone if you made friends with them, we don't know.
Yeah.
Those things.
Although Helen has apparently made friends with him.
I guess. It's nice to be reminded now and then of that, you know, things are happening off the page that we don't see.
Yeah. And that being kidnapped really worked out for the Magus at the end of the day. And they talk about Sophos!
Yeah!
Sophos!
Yeah!
It's a Costas-less section, but it is. There's a Sophos presence.
Yeah.
1 point for Sophos.
It says that the Magus is conscience-stricken to have been safe in Edis while Sophos was abducted, even though his presence there wouldn't have done any good. And it says that before Sophos was abducted, his uncle, the king, had sent him away from the Magus, fearing the Magus' influence or something.
Sophos going missing is both, they're worried about Sophos because Sophos is their friend, but also it reopens the possibility of Helen having to marry Sunnis. And there's that idea again of Jen is going to have to start making decisions for the good of nations and not to individuals. No matter how much he might love them, I think is the phrase.
Yeah.
And that is the fact that that comes up during this discussion between Helen and the Magus, because it's an acknowledgement that in becoming King of Atolia, Jen will have decision-making power over Sunis and Edis, even before that exists in any sort of official capacity.
Right. Which is, I feel like that's the first time we really see that acknowledged in the series. That his, I mean, like, this is the first time we've seen people picture what his growing power is going to mean for the peninsula now that, you know, he's kind of moseying his way into it, I guess.
King, Edis emphasized, of Atolia.
It's explained in Conspiracy of Kings that Sophos, prior to this point in the whole series, had proposed to Edis. But this is the first hint we get of that.
Right.
When Edis is saying right here, apropos of nothing except that he's just gone. But if he, she says, but if he is gone, if he is dead and not a hostage somewhere, would you see me marry Sunis then? Implying that otherwise she would marry Sophos.
Yeah, and it had been previously discussed as a possibility. Like, they'd exchanged letters, they liked each other.
Oh, I forgot about that.
They might have, but that's really, like, she's acknowledging that if he hadn't gone missing, that would be the plan. The Thief of Edis has a certain freedom to do whatever he wants and an accompanying responsibility. And let's just think back to, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah. We get a lot about Jen as thief and thieves in general in this chapter that I feel like we haven't, this amount of detail about it hasn't been revealed to us before. And I think, like, it can really tell us a lot about Jen's motivations in the past for why he is the way he is. Helen tells the Magus, the thieves never swear loyalty to any ruler of Edis, only to Edis itself. The thieves of Edis have always been uncomfortable allies to the throne, Magus. There is the niggling fear that if you fall out with a thief, he might see it as his right and his responsibility to remove you. There are some checks, of course. There is only ever one thief. They are prohibited from owning any property. Their training inevitably generates the isolation that makes them independent, but also keeps them from forming alliances that might become threats to the throne.
And then in the next scene with Relius and Atolia, Relius says, where is it written down? He says of Jen, he has had very little company in his life, and he isn't used to it, that this being in public. But there are other words for privacy and independence. They are isolation and loneliness.
And that's his argument for saying, drive him out. Whether he wants to or not, he belongs in the open. So he's making the argument that not only does the nation need Jen to be a king, but Jen as a person needs to step out more and form connections, I guess.
Is Jen always going to be, to some extent, cut off from other people?
Well, there's the argument that royalty, all royalty, is necessarily cut off from the people below them.
Yeah.
In a way, but he at least still does have his own wife at his level of society and, you know, Helen and Sophos and whatever, so.
But all of those relationships are colored by this, I want to say professional, this, like, official dynamic.
Right.
That is layered over the personal one. Like, Jen, he goes from one type of isolation
to a another. Different type.
Is what it feels like to me.
Yeah. There's a parallel in this way with Irene. We see in this chapter, she's always been set apart because, it says, she raised her head and he was aghast to see her eyes bright with tears. I am tired of driving people and forcing them to my will. I am like a war chariot with bladed wheels, scything down those closest to me, enemies and my dearest friends alike. So she's also someone who has been isolated and lonely, as I think we've brought up many other times, but
and that scythe imagery continues. Is there something in that about, like, tools? Feeling like she's a tool?
Yeah.
And that makes me think back to the thief and the idea of tools. This is really snowballing.
No, yeah. I mean, I think these connections are there for a reason. I think this is a big theme.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to bring up that this metaphor for driving people and forcing them to her will is something that she's tired of, that she's been doing for a long time. But for Jan, on the other hand, it's kind of like he's entering into this stage.
Yeah. But also, he's always sort of done that.
Yeah.
And she says specifically that Jen is used to wielding power in secret, which we've been talking about for this whole book. Another thing about this scene that I need to point out is that Atolia says so to mean yes.
Yeah.
Which I'd forgotten. And because I associate it with Costas, I think of it as like something that, like Costas mm-hmm. isn't a working class person, but he's a soldier. And he's like a rough around the edges. And the fact that she also uses that little
implies
piece of dialect.
It's not just class specific, yeah.
It's Atolian.
Yeah.
And also, it might reveal something about the comfort that she feels with Relius.
Yeah.
Like, it is casual language.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot in this scene about how close the two of them are and how close Relius and Jen are becoming. She says that she's learned that if we truly trust no one, we cannot survive. And that he's now reached a new level of trust where she trusts him unconditionally.
Jen is so annoyingly likable. He comes and he hangs out with Relius. Other nights he related the events of his day, spewing out his insights and analyses of the Atolian court in a devastatingly funny critique. And they talk about plays and poetry and history. I hate him. Stop that. Be less good at stuff. I want the house that she offers to give Relius.
I know.
Can't just give it to me instead. A study and a courtyard and land in the back for goats.
But
he doesn't take it.
I know.
Because he's devoted to her. An idea that is resurfacing here is I think we had talked before about the idea that in this book, a trick is being played. But whose trick is it?
Mm-hmm.
Or whose joke is it? And the fact that, Jen is maneuvering all of these pieces behind the scenes in order to arrive at this end goal. But we find out in this chapter that he's only doing that because Atolia specifically gave that goal to him in order to spur him to do this specific set of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so behind it all, there's him, and then behind him, there's her.
I feel like there's a joke to be made here, but I don't know what it is. Something about Russian nesting dolls.
It's her strategy, because he wanted something. And she said, okay, you can do that if...
Yeah. So he wants to reduce the guard, because it's dangerous to have a guard that large, who could eventually turn on them. And she wants him to be king, so she says, you can reduce the guard when you ask Teleus, and Teleus will say yes. And Teleus will only say yes when he thinks Jen is a king. So Jen has to be a king for Teleus to say yes. And she wants him to be king, so that's why she's like, oh, convoluted.
Yeah, Jen really, he looked at that goal and he picked the most roundabout way to get there. First, I'm going to let a dude punch me. Not the dude I want to convince. Another dude. Then we're going to go in the garden and we're going to learn about wheat.
It's like this enormous, one of those huge domino chains.
Sejanus is going to come back.
Yeah.
The fact that he ain't dead, that it's a flashing red light.
Yeah. I never registered for me on any other rereads, but I read that today and I was like,
never.
I'm betting right now.
Incarcerate your enemy in the hinterland.
Ugh.
It will not end well.
Is this where mercy is going to get us?
This is the actions of people who don't understand that there's going to be a sequel. There's more fallout from the assassination attempt in the form of a temper tantrum thrown by Jen. Like, full on, he destroys everything in his room.
Breaks everything breakable, rips all the hangings, hammers holes into the bedpost with his knife hand.
His knife hand. oh, this is just our harmless friend, Knife Hands McGee.
Smashes all the inkwells over the walls.
Which recalls Irene throwing an inkwell at him mm-hmm. on their wedding night, which is also from this chapter. She talks about how they yeah. both cried on their wedding night. And he suggested having the garden. She threw an inkpot at him. And he ducked.
In that interview that Megan Willantierna gave, I think last summer, the summer before the video interview, she said that she had written down that scene, the wedding night scene, but just cut it out. I want it. She should publish it as a short story sometime.
Come on.
I know. What do we gotta do?
What else did you cut out? Is it Jen's sisters? That's, I'll never let it go. Where no. are they? We got to see his cousins, Heckle and Jekyll.
Him throwing this tantrum and, like, destroying everything in this king's bedroom is also, like, Irene threw all the chairs and the plates when she heard that he and Edith were close or whatever, and Guinevere and Vitolia.
Oh, yeah.
But what I wanted to say about this is this stresses me out, man.
Like, how... They have to clean that up.
Yeah, they're not the ones who clean it up, so that's why they get to do it, but, like, ugh, I stress... For Philologos and Hilarion and like how what is the number? How expensive is it for this 30 seconds of emotional release, which you know,
already talked about how expensive all the stuff in the room is. The cloth of gold.
It's the king's bedroom. Oh, that was her bedroom. That was her bedroom.
I'm sure he also has it.
Probably,
though.
Right? You would think. How expensive do you think accumulated goods for a king of a country would be, right? Hundreds of thousands of dollars in our money. Ugh.
Ugh.
Stresses me out, man.
It's like
this is why they're treasuries
in movies. You know you're an adult when you just sit there and think, "Oh, that's so expensive." But Philologos, instead of being annoyed about that, which I would be, is empathizing with Jen.
Yeah.
And Philologos, if you recall, is the attendant who was the youngest and the only one who is a direct son of a baron. And he explains to the others that Jen isn't angry because Nehusaresh tried to kill him. He's angry because he can't go and kill Nehusaresh.
But because he has one hand.
Because he has one
hand. Do
he doesn't want Atolia to know that he still has this level of rage about it.
Yeah.
It's also, like, Jen, in a really straightforward way, wants to go kill that guy. Which is very different from the Jen of two books ago.
Right.
I mean, I would want to go kill that guy, too. Possibly.
That's a line.
I don't know if I would, tear up my curtains about it. Oh gosh, one more thing. So we get in the conversation between Helen and the Magus this idea that Jen has like a particular sort of power over what's happening on the entire peninsula, or he has the potential to, or mm-hmm. it will become necessary for him to have that. And then in the conversation between Atolia and Relius, Relius says that he sees the possibility of a golden age.
Yeah.
So we're starting to get these sorts of ideas.
Yeah, the camera's starting to pull back and do a panorama yeah. of, like, this is what it could be. Not, like, next week,
but... If you stop being a baby!
Yeah. Let's all just cross our fingers Return of the Thief ends with it all set up, and, like, okay, the Medes are gone, Sejanus is dead, Nehusaresh has died horribly screaming, and...
But nothing lasts forever! Now we have a golden age! In the eyes of the gods, we are all but dust on the wind, Caitlin.
Oh, you're right. Thematically, don't tell me this. Don't wreck my hopes. So, moving back to Queen of Atolia, we got a wonderful ask from No Humans Were Harmed on Tumblr saying, in regards to Queen of Atolia chapter 16, where we were losing our minds trying to figure out. This was when Jen and Irene come up the stairs and the ministers are talking to Atolia, and one minister says he said he wouldn't be here. So we were trying to figure out what that was. This person says, I always interpreted that as he equals Jen. Jen told the Edesian troops that he/Jen would not be there when Atolia arrived at the top of the cliff, as in, he never was going to kill her, that was all a bluff, because she would never believe anything different. He gave her the opportunity to kill him, and she was so ruthless, she was going to do it. He was going to bare his heart to her, and even though she thought she would be killed at the top of the cliff without him, he had prepared the Edesians that he wouldn't be there when she arose. He fully expected to bare his heart and then die, because he couldn't do anything else. She would arrive, she'd still be kidnapped, Edis would negotiate, the war would end, but he would be dead.
I hate it.
This is some next level.
Don't do this analysis. To me. We were wondering if Megan Whalen-Turner intended for this to be ambiguous at all. Because there are definitely points, like, the way that she talks about the thief is that she expected everyone to catch on really quickly.
Right.
And then a lot of readers are surprised. And so...
she might just be giving us more credit than we deserve. Or, like, maybe she... I don't know.
Maybe in this theory, Jen said, there's a possibility that she will kill me. And all the ministers interpreted that as, oh, she's gonna.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't think that he would succeed.
It says, Edis's own chamberlain brought along to perform the obligatory introductions, which she did without a whisker's deviation from his usual palace style. Only once did he falter, looking over his shoulder. He said he wouldn't be here, one of the ministers said in a caring whisper. So, he's facing Atolia, and Eugenides is coming up the stairs behind her. So he could be seeing Jen right then, and then looking behind him at a minister. Mm-hmm. In surprise.
Yeah, in surprise.
And the minister says he said he wouldn't be here.
Hmm, food for thought.
I don't know, man.
Crunchy and full of fiber. That's chapter 12, part 1. Next time, Costas and Jen have a heart-to-heart and then lovingly beat the shit out of each other.
Send us your comments, questions, thoughts. Chime in at atrolianarchives.tumblr.com.
Be blessed in your endeavors.